Let's jump right into it. We've got Controller Susana Mendoza on the line. Over the last few weeks, Andrea Darlis and I interviewed several of the candidates, and we haven't had a chance to talk to the Controller. Last week, I had the opportunity. Was it just last week, Controller, that we did that Merrill Forum?
Yeah, that was fun.
It was weird. It was a lot of people. We were doing our best, but thank you for joining us tonight. How are you doing? How's the campaigning going?
It's going awesome. Today's been a great, great day for us. I'm not sure if you heard the breaking news, I guess, but I am now officially on the ballot.
Well, I heard about some of the signature challenges for many of the candidates. If you could, because I know a lot of people are probably following this, some of the candidates are being challenged. How does that work? If you get a certain number, what's the process like for getting those signatures challenged?
Well, so you need 12,500 minimum to run for office. And the difference is, like, that there's no maximum amount, so that's where it gets crazy. This has become, instead of, like, qualifying for the ballot with 12,500 good ones, people make this into, like, a measuring contest, if you know what I mean, right? So at the end of the day, for me, you know, with a limited time frame to get signatures, we were focused on getting the very, you know, at least 12,500 good quality signatures, and went for obviously more than that. We turned in 25,000. And we knew that we filed with close to at least 16,000 perfect signatures that we had actually verified ourselves before we even filed our petition. So this is why from the get-go I said there's no way she's going to knock me off the ballot. She just did it. You know, this is Tony Preckwinkle, of course, who challenged my petition just to try to, you know, kill any momentum I had or scare off potential donors. But at the end of the day, democracy won today. She dropped her petition challenge. We're only about halfway through the binder count, in other words, checking each signature, and we were already at like 14,000 signatures with still half of the rest of her challenges to go. So every day we were looking better and better and better, and she was looking worse and worse and worse. So I'm glad it's over. I can concentrate on getting my ideas out to the public, and she's going to have to face me at the ballot box. I'm super excited about that.
Now, I know you did you presented or did a speech at the Union Club yesterday and introduced a platform I had not heard of yet. Because during Mayor Emanuel's tenure as the mayor, he closed 50 schools in communities that are pretty hard hit, whether it's economics or racial divide and education. What was the platform? What was the new initiative that you introduced as a plan for Chicago?
Yes, I'm super excited. We're calling it the 50 New Plan. And so 50 stands for 50 of the most underutilized, under-enrolled schools in our struggling neighborhoods and struggling schools themselves. And then new stands for Neighborhood Education Works. And essentially, you know, rather than looking to see which are the next 50 schools that can be closed, I really want to double down on investing in our neediest kids by expanding wraparound services for not just the kids, but the entire family, increasing the number of social workers and investing in school-based supports. So if you can imagine, right now kids get preschool breakfast. That was the initiative that I passed when I first got elected to the legislature, that we provide school and all breakfast. I mean, we provide breakfast in any schools that have children at or below the poverty level, and which means all our kids get free breakfast nowadays. We also provide lunch, as you know, but I would extend it even further to provide supper in 50 of these most underserved and where we have the largest achievement gap between kids of color and you know, your average, you know, Caucasian child, and be able to really make an impact in trying to close that achievement gap. I set a very bold goal of cutting the achievement gap by 50%, at least in half in the next 8 years. So it's a very ambitious goal, but I do believe that when we invest in kids, it's a good return on investment. It's actually a great return on investment for society in so many different ways. And if you think about, right now, kids get out of school at 3:15 or 2:15, depending on where your kids are going to school, or 2:45. I don't know how parents do it, because as a mom of a kid in CPS right now, thank God my husband has a flexible schedule with his work, but most people don't. And most people definitely can't afford to pay nannies to go pick up their kids. And if you live on the West and the South side, it's even more difficult. It's ridiculous that we don't even talk about this. I really, as a mom of a kid in the system, I can relate to how difficult it is. And I think that if we could expand the services that schools provide. We have like 2/3 of the school is laying empty, and actually partner with non-for-profits, folks that do job training, provide life skills, not just for the kids, but for the adults, and provide supper to the kids. So while they're getting supper in a safe environment, which is the school, the parents can also be having access to all types of services that we would do in partnership with the local community. So it's a really great concept. It's new. No one's ever tried it. And, you know, I just know that when we invest in our kids, good things happen. And this is one way to get to the fundamental root cause of why violence even exists in our city.
Now, I know the question a lot of my listeners will have then, you know, when we talk about, and maybe you mentioned this, I know you talked about partnerships and, you know, getting volunteers and things like that, but people will want to know, how do we pay for this?
Of course, they're going to want to know that. Of course, that's the first question that I asked, too, when I was thinking about what kind of things can we do that are transformative. Patty, last 2 years, I've been fighting along with the architect of school funding reform, Senator Andy Menar, and Representative Will Davis, for greater funding, not just for Chicago Public Schools, but for the whole entire state, right? Because their kids are kids no matter where they're at. But here in Chicago, we absolutely needed additional funds that would be used to create a more equitable educational system for children across the city. So those equity funds, right, they're supposed to even the playing field. Some kids need additional resources than other kids do just based on where they start off in the system. And so I want to make sure as mayor that I have a greater say in how we're utilizing and distributing those equitable additional dollars, right?
Right.
And right now I really have no idea how they're spending them. But, you know, one thing I've done as controller is really lay a roadmap for how we're spending people's tax dollars. And I believe that we can leverage some of the $70 million in additional funding that we have specifically for equitable uses and put them to work. And by leveraging that, you know, I'm going to try to think creatively, ask some of the philanthropic community in Chicago to, you know, match some of the dollars that we put into the system. There's lots of cool things that we can do to leverage our business and philanthropic community, but also make sure that we are properly and best utilizing the additional revenue that's coming into the state starting this year. So I almost feel like we can't afford to not invest in these kids. And I want to make sure that we don't give up on our kids, and their mayor's never going to give up on them. So let's try cool, creative, bold concepts, not just do some window dressing and pretend that we're doing something that's really, really fundamentally getting at the root of problems.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, the city has invested in kids, whether or not it has, you know, as you mentioned, been equitable in communities, especially the ones that need it the most. But we are in complete dire straits when it comes to our pension obligations. What are your plans to address that? Because that's something that's on a lot of people's minds as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's multiple things at play. There's, of course, a progressive income tax that we're talking about, although that will take a couple of years before, I would say probably even at the fastest, it'll probably be a couple of years before we start to see any additional revenue coming from a progressive income tax. But I'm going to fight for a casino in Chicago. And I also think that marijuana is probably just around the corner in terms of additional revenue. The key thing is that no matter where the revenue comes from, whether it's a progressive income tax or it's a casino or even off of future revenues from a casino, or if it's, you know, marijuana-related revenue, that at the end of the day, we have to be disciplined about saying X percentage of dollars of new revenue are going to be put directly into the pension fund. If we do that, it's going to give the market, you know, this confidence in the sense that the city's at least doing something and being deliberate and committing to a plan where they can predict and stabilize the level of funding that's going into these funds. Because right now, all we're doing is talking about changing the Constitution, but the honest discussion is not being had with the public that even if you did change the Constitution and change benefits, they don't apply to what's already been incurred. So that $133 billion, which was $130 billion just a year ago, has now gone up because of all this talk about things that aren't actually constitutionally allowable. So at the end of the day, the amortization rate on what we're paying on our pensions is insane. And in order to bring that down, you actually have to start putting actual money into the systems. So any new revenues, we'd have to, I would say as mayor, that I would make sure that we commit X percentage. What that percentage number is, I don't know yet, but we'll be looking at every tool that we have available and how many revenue streams we have that we could utilize a percentage to pay down pensions and help stabilize them and put them on a new path for full funding at some point, or at least 80% funding. But we also potentially would be looking at the bond deal. Now, I am certainly not privy to all the details of what the mayor was looking at, but when I managed to stay through the worst fiscal crisis over the last 2 years, we did do a bonding deal that saved taxpayers between $4 and $6 billion over a 12-year course of that deal. It's a different scenario than what we're looking at with the city, but nonetheless, here's what I would promise, that whatever deal we decide to do, if any, we're going to map it out for the public as to what we're looking, what we're considering. And I want you to know, here's what would happen if we did this, and here's what would happen if we did not do this. And here's what would happen for any combination thereof. And if the people know why we need to do certain things, or what the argument is for doing them or not doing them, then I think taxpayers feel a little bit more comfortable about how their money is being utilized.
We are talking to Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who's running for the mayor of Chicago. Of course, an office that is important. So, I mean, it's the most, in my life, most important job in the city of Chicago, and kind of just in my world. And I want to continue this conversation. If you don't mind, Comptroller, we're going to take a break here. We might drop you out and reconnect, because every once in a while we get a little bit of a buzz. So we're going to see if we can get a better line real quick, if that's okay.
Good. Awesome. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'll take, we've got a couple of texts coming in, and we'll address those when we come back. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. More in a moment with Comptroller Susana Mendoza. Call us at 312-981-7200. You can also text us to the same number, 312-981-7200. Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza is running for the mayor of Chicago's office. And we have her on the line with us right now. And Comptroller, we've got some texts coming in. Let me do this. This one, 8 there. I was told a number and then I ignored it. Hey, Comptroller, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
All right. So one of the things that you talked about in the last segment was about the new 50 and making some underutilized buildings, or not used buildings anymore, as centers for.
No, they are used. So it's the current. We're not talking about the schools that were already closed, but right. We're saying, you know, there's been talk about consolidations of existing schools. And what I'm saying is, let's invest and let's try to find 50 of the most underutilized, under-resourced schools, and really invest in them and those kids.
And one of the things that you had mentioned was the breakfast and lunch programs to help kids who perhaps can't, you know, aren't getting as much food at home. And I actually, I can't disagree with the 847, because I know that when my son was going to school, the 847 says, I work as a nurse, and in CPS, most breakfasts and lunches end up in the garbage, and it tends to be a waste. And I think that that happens quite a bit, because it's just like, sometimes it comes in these plastic wrappers and the food's all mushed, and that seems to be something that needs a little bit of focus on, like, what kind of food will actually be consumed and is healthy for the kids. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the quality of the food.
Yeah.
No, for sure. I mean, we want to make sure that kids, we deal with the issue of food insecurity, which is a very real issue, but then also, what kind of food are you putting in these kids, right?
Right.
So not every parent can afford to send their kid to school with their lunch or a good breakfast, and you'd hope that if we're going to be providing it, that we provide something that meets nutritional standards that you'd want to feed your own kids, right?
Right. Although I love the, we got pizza every morning for breakfast with sausage on it at Lang Tech.
Yeah, here's your carb, your healthy carbs,
exactly.
Is all, not the icing or the cupcake.
That's
yeah.
Right. 870 says, money is needed in all Chicago schools, not just ones in higher minority areas. I don't think that was necessarily what you were saying, but there are neighborhoods that are in distress. What do you think about that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, no doubt. The funding that we fought very hard to get for Chicago schools is in addition to what we were already getting. And that money is going to, it's being spread out throughout the whole city. But part of the reason that funding formula, the whole point of passing school funding reform, was to be able to target dollars where they're needed the most. So, for example, kids in certain zip codes start out, you know, 13 points below the average reading score, whereas kids in, you know, just to be blunt, like a black child is averaging 13 points lower than the median reading score versus a white child who's like 26 points above, right? And no one can tell me that black children and Hispanic children are born, you know, any less smart than a white child. But the fact of the matter is that if we are not investing dollars based on what the greatest need is, given certain challenges that exist, then these kids are getting to a point where when they get to high school, they're, you know, it's almost impossible for them to reach a level of success that other kids in different neighborhoods are able to achieve. So it's really just about, when we use the word equity, it's not equal. Equity doesn't mean equal. It's about putting it where those resources are going to make the biggest impact,
right,
to put all kids in as close to par with each other as possible. And that's a good thing. We should want that. It's going to produce a greater quality of students capable to succeed in college, become really great contributors to the tax base. And at the end of the day, if you don't want to do this for the morally correct thing to do, think about it as it's also the fiscally sound approach.
I also want to talk a little bit about the Chicago Police Department. Tragically, we lost two officers 2 nights ago. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the need to reconnect the police department with communities. There is this a great amount of tension. A lot of times police officers don't have much say in some of the policies or what's going on in their day-to-day jobs. What is your approach to CPD if you are mayor of Chicago?
Well, I'd say that the you know, probably one of the greatest challenges of the mayor is going to be to restore trust between the police and the communities that they serve. And that is really like the crux of everything. And it starts by, of course, providing greater training and resources to the police officers. I mean, these guys, I think, first of all, let me just start by saying that I believe that anyone who puts on a uniform and decides to go out and risk their life every day for people that they haven't even met is worthy of our respect. And we can have disagreements as to how some police officers, you know, treat people, that maybe they should not be police officers, but we shouldn't paint all police with a broad brush, given that there's a few bad apples. The fact of the matter is, though, that there's a very different mentality that needs to shift with the police department, even with the good guys. I mean, the fact of the matter is that our police department, and I think as police officers in many different cities as well, especially large urban areas where, you know, there's higher incidence of crime, are really living day to day with this warrior mentality instead of a guardian mentality. And I spoke a lot about that in my speech yesterday, that, you know, the Justice Department's report talked about changing the ethos of the police officer's mentality away from the warrior mentality, which is what you would expect with people who wear the uniform in the military, right? That's the military mentality of a warrior mentality when they're in a war zone. But in Chicago, our police also oftentimes have this warrior mentality, and it's time that we really begin to fundamentally try to shift that mentality to more of a guardian, a protector of sorts. And that's going to be a big deal, I think, in changing this relationship. But most importantly, it can't happen if we're still, if the only training that the police get in this department is essentially when they become new recruits, and then there's no continual training, quarterly training, career training throughout the many years that they end up serving as police officers. So we have to be honest about the need to invest in training for officers, properly resourcing them, but also trying to focus on this different shift from a warrior to a guardian mentality. I think that'll be helpful.
We've been talking to Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who's running for mayor of Chicago, and I hope that you'll join us in studio sometime. I'm thinking about doing mayoral panels every week in January. Three or four candidates maybe joining us here and having a conversation.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I think
you know,
so.
I love to go. I would have been there tonight, but little boy, you know, little David,
yeah,
he is coughing like a seal. I thought he had croup or something.
My
husband took him to the doctor today, and he said he doesn't have the croup, which is good.
Yeah,
but
thank God.
I have a raspy enough voice as it is. Imagine if I was going, it'd be worse. So no, I'm trying to stay healthy here, but I promise you, I love going in studio. I'd be happy to share the chairs with some of the other candidates. This is exciting that we have so many people running for mayor. Democracy is a good thing, and I'm looking forward to hearing ideas from everybody else, but hopefully winning over, hopefully my ideas will win over at the end of the day and I'll be your next mayor. But in the meantime, thanks for the opportunity to share some of my thoughts with you guys. And if I don't see you before Christmas, Merry Christmas to everyone, or whatever holiday you celebrate. You know, I hope you have a great time and enjoy your family as well.
Thank you. You as well, Controller. Great to hear from you. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Thanks so much, Greg.
Of course.
Bye-bye.
More after this on 720 WGN. Listening to WGN Radio, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. In a incredible twist of events in my life. First, I became a host of WGN Radio, and never thought that would happen. And one day, a friend of mine, Michelle L'Amour, said, I have a friend who's an incredible author, and she's come out with a book, and would you have her on your show? And I said, absolutely. And I don't know what the universe had in store, but I became friends with Leslie Zemeckis, who is an incredible writer, historian, and actress. And along the way, had the opportunity to meet her husband, Robert. And when they asked me if I was interested in interviewing him, I was like, well, yeah, hold on a second. Let me also make sure that my fellow host, Nick DiGilio, is available. Because as many of you know, Nick is a big fan. Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
No, to say I'm a big fan of Robert Zemeckis is an understatement.
I know.
One of my favorite filmmakers that's ever lived and has made, in my opinion, not one, two, but several masterpieces. And just a huge fan.
And we are honored to have in studio with us, Robert Zemeckis.
Thank you. Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Nick and I had the, it was wonderful to see Welcome to Marwen yesterday. And I get the chills thinking about it. And I know that Nick saw a lot in it that I wouldn't necessarily pick up on. Because Nick was, we were on the way out and he was like, and then there was this. And then there's another. So Nick, I wanted to start there because there's so much for me when it comes to the idea of the spirit and creating art and living through tragedy that speaks a lot to a lot of my experience and what I felt through the movie, but I also wanted to focus on that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of things in the movie that were totally Zemeckis, which makes sense because you made the movie. But there were also allusions to other movies, and there's obvious, I don't want to give anything away, but late in the film, there's a very obvious one. But real quick question, was the General Stilwell thing, was that a tribute to 1941?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many people know who General Stilwell is? But you know,
I'm kind of an obsessive fan. But one of the questions that I have for you is: no other filmmaker that I can think of has been on the cutting edge of technology as much as you have been. And I'm talking all the way back to like Back to the Future and a groundbreaking film like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And now, as this technology moves on, and by the way, the stuff that you do in this movie is flawless. Like going from the motion capture to the real stuff is just amazing. How do you feel about as the technology has moved on over the years, and you've been on the edge of it? What's going on now in terms of technology that you're looking forward to?
Well, you know, I'm not really like a technology geek. I just like to, you know, look around when I'm making a movie to see what the new tools are and figure out a way to utilize them. I think, you know, what is obviously happening, because you know the digital cinema is digital. And the horsepower of processing moving images is getting more and more powerful every hour. That we're probably around the, you know, it's, we can create any image, we can create any sound, and we're probably, it's right around the corner where we'll be able to create a photoreal human character that no one will be able to tell is an avatar, just like we can do in still photographs now.
Mm. And that's kind of explain or explored in the film. That's one of the, that's kind of one of the themes in Marwen that you kind of explore.
You mean, well, we use a process. We got an advanced performance capture that we use to create these, you know, the stories about this guy and his imagination who creates this doll world, and these dolls are populated by he creates a action figure or a fashion doll based on people that he knows in real life. And we use our actors and actresses who play the live-action characters to also do the performances of the dolls. And it's pretty good. It's pretty spectacular.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was blown away. I mean, I couldn't decide. I mean, you know, there were moments where I was like, this is, it's just so incredible to take in, right? That blending of going from live action of what's actually happening and being, for him to be able to escape into that and play things out differently is remarkable.
Yeah, And it's now what we should probably explain what the movie's about. Sure. And it's based on a true story as well.
Right. Yeah, you want me to explain?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's based on a true story. I came across it when I was channel surfing and I stumbled upon the documentary Marwen Call. It was about this guy's life, and I was, you know, and it's a story about this guy who tragically is beaten in a hate crime, almost within almost to death. And he was an illustrator, and he lost all his memory of his past life and his ability to use his hands to draw. So he had no resources and he had no money. And so when he got out of the hospital to process this tragedy, he started to create this 1/6 scale miniature world populated by these action figures, and started to take photographs of these tableaus that he set up. And that's how he worked through his PTSD. And when I saw the movie, what struck me was, you know, that it was this, you know, this amazing, hopeful story about the healing power of art. And I was able to identify with that. And I think it's a universal story. Everyone, I think, uses their artistic expression or their imagination to process what's going on in their life, complicated things that are going on in their life. But then also between these photos that he took, where there were these elaborate stories, and I thought, now there's a movie. I thought, now if we can go into his mind's eye, into his imagination, and see this world that he could only take still photographs of come to life, that's the stuff of movies.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. And you know, to the idea of the healing power of art, what I thought about when I was walking back from the screening was, you know, there are people who choose to be artists because they want to be famous, or they see someone else who's really good at something and they want to be able to do that. But Mark, who, you know, doesn't even remember much of what he did or why he did it, still is driven to do it. And that's just somebody who needs to.
Yeah, and he's a pure artist in that respect, because he's not looking to be famous. He's not looking to make money. He's just doing it because he has to do it.
Right.
And that's just, and still to this day, and that's really fantastic about him.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting that you point, because you've explored this kind of theme before in other movies about, like, sort of the isolated person who has to express themselves in order to change, and like in Contact, mm-hmm. and in Castaway, and it seems to be a theme that you've explored before. And you just mentioned that you could identify with it. Is it something personal about this theme?
Oh God, no. Well, not on this. I mean, I, you know, thank God I never, you know, had to suffer a tragedy like he did. But no, I mean, like, I understand the power of art to help simplify complex things that I'm feeling. And I think, and that's the simplest form. And that's why we listen to music. That's why we read poems, why we look at paintings, why we read novels and go to movies, is because that's what it does for us. It helps to simplify these complicated emotions, if you will, that we're feeling. I think that's a universal theme, and I think that, you know, no matter what you do, whether you sing in the, you know, church choir, or you bake cupcakes, you're that's an artistic expression, and you have and humans have to do that. And so I think you know, the story can, you know, touch anyone who goes to see the film.
We continue our interview. Nick DiGilio and I had the opportunity to sit down with Robert Zemeckis and talk about Welcome to Marwen and his incredible cinematic career. The other thing that struck me, I did go and seek out clips of Marwen Call, and hope I'll have a chance to see it very soon, the whole documentary. But the way he's now been able, Mark, in real life and in the film, connect with the people he makes the dolls about or mm-hmm. for.
Right.
And because it seems as though before this beating, he wasn't necessarily that connected to the people in his community either.
No, he was completely isolated. As a matter of fact, he was... very much, addicted to alcohol, and he was struck sober after the beating, which is another amazing part of the whole story. But yeah, when you're in that disease, that disease isolates you completely from the world. So yeah, he was just in his own, you know, his own addiction. But what he does now is, you know, he honors the people who are important to him in his life.
Right.
And what he does is he honors you by creating a alter ego that he populates in this, you know, this, well, it's not, his town is actually does exist. He built it in his backyard. But the adventures are imaginary that he puts these people in. And the people who are in his life are the people who... He creates these dolls who are the, you know, are alter egos and they populate his village and his imagination, and they're put on these wild adventures. You know, they're zapped back into 1944 Belgium, which is where his doll adventure takes place. Yeah. I know it's strange. You got to see the movie.
It is a hard film to describe. It works on so many levels, though. I mean, it's an incredibly emotional film. Like, I cried and I was invested in the character. And by the way, Steve Carell is astonishing in the movie. It is such a great performance.
And I want everyone to know too that it's not a heavy.
No,
it's sad. It's got a comedy in it. It's got action, a lot of action. It talks about female empowerment and all kinds of, you know, he's got these really, you know, badass women who are his protectors and his guardians, and you know, it's got a lot of fun stuff, but it is a heartfelt and heartbreaking. But ultimately I think it's an hopeful movie.
It's completely hopeful, and also just flat out entertaining. Like, if you want to go and have a great time at a movie, this is the movie to see. And just so astonishingly well made in terms of special effects, and the action sequences are so well put together. It's a flat out really entertaining movie, and you'll be moved too, but that's an extra,
right?
So, but right. You know, I wanted to mention that, you know, I was talking about the technology that you worked with that period of time when you were working on the animated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What did you get out of that, from 2004 to like 2000?
Oh, you mean the performance capture stuff?
Yeah, the performance capture stuff when you started with Polar Express and went through to Beowulf.
Well, you know, I went through a stage where I loved it because when I discovered that on Polar Express, it was this wonderful thing that happened for me, which is this technology arrived that enabled me to separate performance from what I call the tyranny of filmmaking. It gave me, as you know, as a movie director, which you know, you could say is, you know, maybe someone who's you know, not completely, maybe somewhat of an egomaniac, but I mean, a film director, I was able to just do performance and concentrate on that without having to worry about lighting and hitting marks and, you know, setting up the camera and get the performance exactly right, and allowing the actor to perform in continuity from beginning to end. And then I was able to then do the cinema at my leisure, because I would put the cameras in virtually and create, you know, and the performances never changed. So I never had to torture my actors by making them bend into a pretzel so I could get my really cool shot and torture them doing take after take because they can't hit the focus, or there was an extra in the background who looked in the lens.
Right.
All those horrible things and there's nothing worse when you're there as a director and, you know, the actor is doing the scene and he does a turn on a line and he does a line reading that you don't know where it came from, but it's just so magnificent, and you're there and you're just exhilarated, and you say cut and the camera operator says, I need another one. Because the focus buzzed.
Oh.
And you know, there's no way that the actor, because it just came, it was magic. And you know, so anyway, I was, after making all these movies, I was thrilled to be liberated from that.
And what did you from working with that? Because the movie that you did after you did that series of the motion capture stuff was really, I mean, you really jumped back into the deep end with Flight. And what was that, coming off of those films, what was it like to do Flight? Because it's it's a great film too, and Denzel gives such an astonishing performance in that.
Yeah, well, you know, it for me, it was all just fine. I just rolled back into it. I mean, it was like, you know, I was always doing the same thing, even though I was working in this different discipline for a while. But when I got back into Flight, it was great to be back there. I mean, you know, there were times when, you know, there were times when there was an imperfection in the way we did a shot or something, and I just had to let it go. You know, and it's just, and it's fine. You know, it's just, so I don't have, you know, an agenda either way. But reflecting back on it, everything that I did in my career, I mean, everything I did in my career, if you want, probably going back to, say, Roger Rabbit to start, from a technological point of view, prepared me to do Marwen.
Mm.
Welcome to Marwen, because I used all my tricks in this movie.
That's what it seems. That's exactly what it seems like. That's exactly what it seems like.
Yeah, everything from, I mean, the humor and the heart of it. You know, I mean, and it's amazing. Like, you can be invested in a movie, but I don't know if Nick could hear me, because I was so distraught about the Jeep with all the women in it as a car turned around. Mm. Right, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to handle it if something.
Oh, you thought I was going to get run over?
Yeah.
I didn't want to ruin it for him, but I was like, oh, please don't scream in front of Nick.
Well, I was going to scream too,
wasn't sure if I could physically handle it. And that's one of the things that, you know, when Nick does his movie club out in Rosemont and did the Summer of Zemeckis, I know that the audience connects with so many of the movies that he showed. For me, growing up, Back to the Future, I think I mentioned this when I geeked out in front of you when you came in with Leslie. I've only written two fan letters in my entire life, and one of them was to Svengoolie, and I'm not sure if you're familiar. He's a local hero, and the other was to Michael J. Fox. Uh-huh. That movie just—I had to see it over and over again. I was a kid, and my parents let me catch the bus and go to the Pickwick Theater and see it over and over again. I know Nick has movies on his list that are similar viewers.
Yeah,
I grew up loving movies, and you just have touched so much of my life.
Yeah.
That's why I was so thrilled to have you in.
So many movies that you've made have been cornerstones for me. You know, I think Used Cars is the funniest movie of all time.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And I'm still astonished. And by the way, for people who get the DVD, listen to the audio commentary.
That was one of the most fun I ever did.
Oh, my God. It's the funniest.
It was, because we had Kurt Russell, who was on. He was on, and it was, I know, that was hilarious.
It was so entertaining. But let me quickly say that one of my favorite moment of the DVD commentary on Used Cars, and I have many favorite moments, is you guys reacting to the shot of Garrett Graham almost getting hit by the car.
Right.
I mean, just like, you're like, how did we get away with this?
Right. I know. Those were the days when, you know, I get goosebumps thinking of the stuff I did. How about, you know, dropping two real kids out of the back of a station wagon? I mean, they would put me in jail to do that nowadays, you know. I mean, even though their father was a stuntman,
yeah,
you know, you can't do stuff like that anymore.
But very quickly, I mean, so many movies meant a lot to me. Like Castaway, I think, is a stunt. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I can watch it over and over and over and over again. And I also think that Bob Hoskins deserves so much credit for that performance, because it's not only did he get the accent, did he get the style. He's acting with nobody. I mean, it's an astonishing performance.
Oh, yeah. And when I said to him, so, you know, Bob, you know, how you doing? He goes, oh, you know, a lot of times I get less from the actors I work with, so I'm just doing perfectly fine here.
And Forrest Gump. And by the way, the Zemeckis Fest that I hosted at my film club, we had huge crowds. And I do a Q&A afterwards, and we talk about the movies. And we showed Used Cars and Back to the Future and Forrest Gump, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Back to the Future 3. And I'm hosting a screening of Marwen.
Fabulous.
At the Rosemont Theater, the AMC Rosemont, on Saturday the 27th.
Awesome. So. Perfect.
Yeah, well, I'll be there. It has been an absolute honor. We're so grateful for your time.
Well, thank you.
On behalf of our listeners, too, I know that you got such a busy schedule.
Appreciate it.
It's wonderful. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. For the last year, director of events for DePaul University, Jen Kramer, has featured a different person on her page, on her Facebook page, and telling us why that person means something to her. And it could be someone that she knows intimately, has known for years. And thank you very much for putting me on there, Jen. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty great.
This was a beautiful thing. What inspired you to focus on an individual every day and tell us a story about them and this expression of love?
You know, I am not somebody who'd ever made a New Year's resolution.
Okay.
Right? Ever. I mean, I don't have anything against them. I just, if I made them, they never stuck. And I read an article that said, instead of taking away something, giving up bread, whatever, why don't you take something on?
Okay.
Like, take on a practice, whether it was meditation or whatever. And I just sat with that. Like, what could I do? You know, I could really do something every day. And between you and me, I haven't done anything for 365 days in a row.
Except
other
this.
Than take a shower, which, you know, there's a few days in there that I didn't get one. No, truthfully. So my aunt was having eye surgery on January 1st or 2nd or whatever. And I thought, you know, I'm going to tell somebody every day And then I'm like, no, I'm going to put it on social media. So the world knows who these people are. So if I disappear off the face of the earth one day, everybody will know how I felt about them.
Oh.
And I thought, 1 month, I could probably do this once a week. Then all of a sudden, it sort of took off, right? 8 months, 9 months, 9 and a half yes. months later, I'm still doing it. So it's been a transformational experience. And I know that's a big dramatic word, but it has... I will not be the same out of this sort of experiment of sorts.
Because you make a commitment. It's not like just a sentence. It's not like, here's someone I like. You know, I see them on my way to work. It is an investment of expression that's beautiful.
And I've had to kind of sit and think about the person, yes. right? But it's not just been people I know. Right. I think what started to happen then is everywhere I went, somebody sort of showed up, right? There's this homeless guy I worked downtown in the Loop. On my block. He's there every day. I stopped and introduced myself one day. All of a sudden, we now have a friendship. I have people sending me money to buy him a winter coat.
What?
You know, so it's been one after another, because then it became about, let me go find where love is. Like, it's just going to show up. My dry cleaner, my, you know.
Yeah, your donut. I think you had a donut guy on
there. My Dunkin' Donuts guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I'm telling you, I remember a lot of these faces and their Thank stories. You. And I think that's, you know, and while other people might not take on something like this, of this mm-hmm. nature, I think spreading that is also, as you mentioned, people are investing their time and money in order to connect with the people that you've connected your friends with.
Well, and what's been really beautiful about it is I've had a lot of people say to me, I'm doing that next year. I might not do it like you did it, but I'm going to do it. And of course, you should do it in your own way.
Right.
I'm going to do it once a week. Or
sure.
It's just been an experiment of sorts in today's day and age, particularly on social media, where things are so negative and so people are calling each other names. I thought, you know what? I need to stick a stick in that wheel and right. do something radically different.
Right. No, that makes complete sense. It's yeah. a beautiful thing. And how have some of your friends reacted? Because it's almost, do you have friends who are like, hey, do you not love me? Have you had anybody like
so
that?
So this is what I'm up against, right? I have 2 weeks left.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, yesterday, one of my very dearest friends in the whole world, Karen Doris. I'm like, but truth be told, she knows
know.
How I feel about
sure.
it. But I wanted, you know, I wanted to give her the big love bomb,
right.
I call
Aww.
It. Sometimes I sit on my couch at night and I'm like, who's going to get the love bomb today?
Who gets the love bomb?
Because if somebody doesn't show up for me during the day, you right. know, I have to sit and think about it.
Yeah.
Who's somebody? Somebody's like, I don't know that many people. I call bollocks. You know that many people.
You do know that
you know,
many people.
People, yes. you... Every individual I know knows that many people. You just have to sit and think about it for a while.
Did you, you know, go with the intention? You mentioned one person, the homeless person who you now know.
Mm-hmm.
Were there other people that you decided, okay, eventually I want to write something about them,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to get to know them a little bit more to mm-hmm. kind of unearth what that's going to be?
Yeah. So somebody asked me if I had like a spreadsheet. Do you have a plan?
Do you?
I don't.
Okay.
I've kept track, though. I have written down who I've done because I have a tendency, like tonight, I'm like, oh, Patty Vasquez, clearly it's going to be the love bomb tonight. But
you already wrote one.
I already wrote one.
You did.
So I have given some thought, like, gosh.
Right. You have to keep track.
You do. You don't want to do it more than once. But I have said, my dry cleaner, I didn't walk in one day and be like, can I take your picture? You know, I have sure. gotten to know them. I've asked right. them questions. And then, you know, some people are like, no, don't take my picture, but thanks. A lot of people are like, of course, take my picture. I want to hang it on the wall. You know, my dry cleaners have their picture hanging on the wall that I took.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
So it's been my relationships are different. My friendships are different. It's I highly, highly recommend it.
I think it's wonderful. I don't know that I don't know that I could take that on.
Yeah.
And I think that I'll try to find something. I don't think I could do it every day. It's a high bar that you've set.
It is a high. I mean, I don't do anything every day. Truly. I mean, there are some things I'm sure I do every day, but I don't have a practice that I do every day.
Do you think will there be people that you think of like after the first? I mean,
for sure,
we'll be like, oh, you know what? I had a few more.
Well, I had a conversation with my friend Cindy Hamilton today at lunch, and she said, "So, how's this gonna end? Like, it has to have some big finale."
Well, I feel like you need to. I wish you could make like a book out of it.
I wish I didn't have to stop.
Well, you don't have to.
But then it wouldn't be the year of love anymore.
It wouldn't be the year of love part deux.
Redux. Yeah, I have to give some thought to that. Right, I have 2 weeks.
Well, you could also, you know, to transition if you find that you still have people, what I love, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, because, you know, the year of love could be, I love, you know, obviously you have a great affinity for Navy Pier right behind me or parts of the city. I don't know. I don't want to make, I don't want to give you any assignments.
A lot to think about.
A lot to think about. We'll think about it during the break. Let's take a break here. We're talking to Jen Kramer, Director of Events at DePaul University, and we're talking about her year of love. Coming up in a little bit, I want to talk about your Christmas memories. What does Christmas mean to you? And, you know, the holidays. I know some people are like, oh, you have to be all PC. No, I mean, there's a big audience out there. There's a great big world out there, and we celebrate things differently in our lives. More in a moment on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. If you want to join our conversation, you can call or text us at 312-981-7200. Wait, Jen Kramer, you're giving me new information. There's an Anderson's Candy Shop on the way to your grandma's?
In Richmond.
In Richmond.
Yeah.
On the way to grandma's house.
Oh my gosh, it was such a huge deal. They used to have this unbelievable molasses taffy.
Ooh.
My mom, it's a shout out to my mom who's probably asleep, but that's okay. It's the most delicious. Oh, they're chocolate.
Can you watch them making the taffy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's something
you
mesmerizing.
Could. I think things are different now.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know about now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, their chocolate is tops.
It is. And it's right here.
Yeah.
Return
and their
American.
English toffee, delicious. I didn't realize you could order online.
You could order online. Now
yeah, I'm totally
going
to do that.
Yeah. Get that done.
For sure.
Hand-dipped chocolates, too.
Yum.
We were talking to Jen Kramer about her year of love. Every single day, she featured somebody in her life in whatever capacity and why they were important to her and an expression of love. And I think it's incredible. You were talking about how much it's changed you, right? I mean, like, there's something to when you change the way you think and what you put out there, it changes your brain chemistry.
There is no doubt. You know, they talk about higher vibrations. You know, gratitude is one of the highest vibrations. And, you know, Oprah at one point said, write 5 things down a day that you're grateful for. It will change your life. I was like, yeah, right.
Right.
So when I took this on, I didn't really think about any of this.
Right.
I really just thought, I'm going to try something every day. And it really blossomed into this really incredible transformational thing for me. I mean, and it is just an exercise in gratitude, right? It's just a gratitude for people. But I really wanted people to know how I felt about them, if something would ever have happened to me.
And that's, and that part of it is compelling to me, too, that in case something happens to you, you didn't leave anything unsaid for people.
That's exactly it. Because you do hear that, right? Like, only if I had only had the chance.
Right. When you lose somebody. You think of that when you lose somebody. I wish they knew how much they meant to me.
So much more to say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. But I also think that, you know, as much as this was a focus for you to find that in yourself, I want you to know how much I know you mean to so many people.
Oh.
And I mean, you're just this, you have always had this great energy. The work that you did for Special Olympics, and I saw that you guys recreated the Polar Plunge for Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this wonderful adventure.
So I don't know a lot about it other than I was an extra.
Okay.
I actually did go in the water. It was a beautiful 40-degree day, so I have no complaints. But Chicago Fire is doing an episode that includes the Polar Plunge.
Okay. And we don't know if there's, like, something must happen then at the Polar Plunge. I hope they're not saying there was, like, somebody has an incident.
I do not believe that is the case.
All right.
It felt very much more feel good. But they did
a
phenomenal job of portraying Chicago, and the fact that it's for Special Olympics was, you know, an incredible plug. And it's going to air right before our Polar Plunge.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Yeah,
I love that they're featuring it.
It's really miraculous. Well, you know, that incredible crew at Chicago Fire has done the plunge for about the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So they're very invested. They come every year. They're super excited about it. So that's great.
I was in because I do the Fight for Air Climb. What I do is I do that, and then I try to catch up with you guys afterwards.
Exactly.
And I was with Steve Eichenberg.
Yeah.
Right? And he, the first year I did it, I did the Fight for Air Climb. I was with him, and he was like, come on, we'll do this together, and we'll head over to North Avenue Beach. And I was like, all right, that'd be great. We'll be all sweaty.
Right.
And then we'll get, you know, go jump in the lake. But here's the thing. I don't run the stairs, and Steve does.
Oh, he does.
Oh, and he's that little guy.
He's,
I mean, like, he just popped up the stairs.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll see you
at the beach.
North Avenue.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna have to do that.
Do you walk them, Patty?
I walk them.
Yeah.
I absolutely
walk them.
That's
so great.
It's 4 buildings, 45 floors each. It's a lot.
That's 170 floors?
185, I think.
My math is bad.
Maybe 165. Over 100 and something.
At Presidential Towers?
Yep, all 4 towers. And I did it 1 year, I did a fifth. I came back around because one of our coworkers was not going to do, he was thinking about not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, I haven't finished yet. Let's go. Let's do this together. And we went to the top.
You're an overachiever.
No, I just wanted to get him to the top.
Yeah.
And he did such a great job.
That's miraculous. 45 each building.
Each building. And they asked me not to do that again. they don't want to be responsible for that. Have I mean, with the Polar Plunge, the weather has been the one year Jimmy Fallon. I love that video of him when he's like, it's such a shock to fall backwards.
Right? Yeah. That was 2015.
Yeah.
Which really changed the event. I mean, everything being said, but that was the coldest.
Yes.
I think
the polar vortex.
It was a polar vortex. The air temperature was like 16 degrees.
Oh.
So it was bad. Wind chill, of course, was in the negatives. But the, you know, the water really never gets much below freezing.
Right.
That year, it was like a Slurpee. You know, it was so icy that they had to keep sort of breaking the ice away. That was not a good one.
That seems treacherous.
But when, you know, the air is 40 and the water is 35, I mean, it's not too bad.
You're like, oh, if we could just hold on to this.
A million needles.
And it's so festive.
Yeah.
The now there are tents. Do people have to like register to have a tent, a personal tent to like sort of do a staging area?
Yeah. Or? So there's like warming tents and then there's changing tents. And ComEd is a huge partner of the Polar Plunge and they have like 1,000 plungers. So they have a huge giant tent. I happen to have a tent because I have been the largest fundraiser. But participants don't get, you know, they don't get to have a tent.
I was wondering about that. I'm like,
I just get a special spot.
What is this magic? It's like, I'm, you know, there's Harry, there's like Hogwarts, and then there's Jen's tent at North Avenue Beach.
Well, you have to just raise a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Well, I will help you with that.
Yeah, good.
We'd love to have you on again before that happens.
For sure.
What's the date? Do you remember for this
March
year?
3rd.
March 3rd.
Just triple confirming. It's always the first Sunday in March.
Okay.
And it's, you know, we like to call it the original Sunday Fun Day. March 3rd, Sunday, March 3rd.
By the way, I have to tell you something exciting.
Yeah.
Our friends at Anderson's, they're listening.
They are.
They're listening. And they said, awesome, with our read, the Anderson family is listening and still working to fill your orders. They're waiting for your call right now, Jen.
They're like Christmas elves.
Yes. It's so appreciative. Thank you so much, Anderson's. We love, love, love your chocolate.
Delicious chocolate.
Yes. We get them every year. And there you go. They're working right now. So if you email them, if you go online and order, they're actually going to be, they're listening. It's all this wonderful sort of connectivity that is magical.
They're awake and working.
They're awake
and filling your chocolate orders.
Yes. Tom, have you had a chance to try Anderson's? I'm going to make sure you get some of my stash.
I mean, I wish I had had a chance to try. Well, you know what? I did. I did try some Anderson's at Dean's Tree Time Remote.
That's right.
Because they were so kind to come, and because they're not far from Tree Time at all.
Right.
And they were so kind to come and bring some delicious samples.
They're very cool.
They're English toffee.
Uh-huh.
If that's your jam, which it is mine. Delicious.
I just was. I'm cleaning the house, and they sent a picture of some of their crew and a thank you letter to me because of the work I was doing in Springfield of covering the story. Mm-hmm. And I keep that. I mean, I try to keep as many of those as I can. And it's funny because you can't really thank a thank you letter, and so now I'm thanking them for their thank you letter.
Right.
It was very sweet. Mm-hmm. I have to be better about that. I think that your expression of love, your year of love on Facebook is such an inspiration. I'm sure that, as you mentioned, there are a lot of people who are going to try to figure out ways to incorporate that in their lives.
And however that looks for each individual, you know, it might just be, and maybe it's not a public thing. Maybe it's that they are writing it down or keeping track or telling somebody in private. But, you know, the expression of gratitude is really what made all the difference.
I think that's wonderful. I try to, I just like even small moments, I try to take a mental picture of it and know that you're connecting with somebody. I was at my Dunkin' Donuts. It was funny that you posted your folks. The woman was thanking me for knowing exactly what I wanted. And I just imagined, and I was like, I'm so sorry. Because it means that almost everybody that goes in there just stands there and like, marble, frosted. And
right.
So it was just sort of the sweet thing where she thanked me for...
Right. Well, those moments of interaction like that that are so tender. You know, that for me, when things seem to be falling apart all over the place, I have to keep it in perspective.
Right.
And, you know, those tender moments, you ordering the donut, she being proud of you, knowing what, you know, it's like that doesn't happen every moment of the day. So being aware of it and being conscious of it taking place is.
I wish we could do it when we're driving. More after this on 720 WGN. is the number to call or text us. We'd love to hear from you. Again, that's 312-981-7200. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and it is the lovely, warm feelings of the holidays. Joining me in studio is the director of events for DePaul University, Jen Kramer. And I feel like I see you a lot at the holidays. I feel like you and I are both cold weather when things start to, come together for the celebration.
It's the best time of year.
It really is.
It's my favorite time.
It's my favorite time, too. Have you how are your decorations this year? Did you feel like you went all out?
Yeah.
Because you put your trip early. You
put my trip like November 1st.
You're like, I'm in.
Yeah, Hannah Stanley. We're in a club.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of work.
It is.
And it's lovely to have it up. It's super cozy and warm and the lights are great. I get a little tired of it in the next couple of weeks, but it's, yeah, I went overboard this year.
Well, you always have an elegant tree. You always show a picture of your tree and it looks.
I'm going to do a Chicago tree next year.
That's a great idea.
All Chicago ornaments.
This year, I did one themed element in the house for Griffin, who is a huge fan of Doctor Who. And I ordered some of the doctors throughout the series, about four of the doctors, and but I have a wreath. I can only have a wreath of the real pine because my younger son is allergic. So, but I was really thrilled. He came home and he was so surprised. He has felt so special that something was dedicated
so cool.
to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. To his passion. But a tree with Chicago, I love that idea.
Yeah, because every year I try and buy a new one. You know, I Chris Kindle Market, last year I got the bean, a really cool dimensional bean, and the Chicago marquee from the theater. And I saw on Etsy this year, they have a six-pointed star and the colors of the flag. So I'm going to do it up next year.
You could also string some popcorn. Do your Garrett's popcorn.
And then eat it while you're decorating.
Have you ever done the cranberry and popcorn?
We used
strings?
To when I was growing up.
So
yeah, it hurts your fingers, but it looked great.
Yeah, it's weird to sew food. You are.
Without eating it. I mean, pop popcorn and try not to eat any of it.
It's impossible. Although I would also eat the cranberries.
What's wrong with your garlands? Just cranberries.
It's just cranberries. It's just, well, you know, it's like those red beads. Why just buy those?
Try forcing a needle through a cranberry. It's not easy.
It's good practice, though. I'm not sure for what. Maybe a lot of doctors came out of that, that practice. Yeah, we used to do the popcorn and cranberry, too.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I think I'm always in search of, unique ornaments for the tree, too. But I've never done a themed one, the whole tree. It's just kind of this hodgepodge.
Yeah, mine is a total hodgepodge.
Yeah.
But all your favorites, right? I made my mom's coaching was buy an ornament on vacation.
Right.
So then when you unpack them, you relive those memories or you talk about the places where you went. And that's really fun when they have meaning like that.
I love stacking all the presents too. And it doesn't have to be a lot, just like, you know, the promise of what's to come.
Exactly.
You know, and ready to open those on Christmas morning. David Jennings in our newsroom. What are the decorations like at your house or some of the memories that you enjoy making or, sort of reflecting on?
Well, we did the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And my primary job was the draping of the tinsel.
Oh, yes.
Since all the decorations were rather delicate. So I wasn't trusted with that right away. It took a little while.
Okay.
You know, and
there's definitely a technique that you have to employ to make sure that it's evenly distributed. You don't have like big clumps. You know, you can see where people give up sometimes, right?
Yeah, I just kind of, to a point, got it to like a fling thing. So you just change where you stand as you fling. So you fling a little high, fling a little mid, fling a little low. And, you know, it kind of got its way around. I mean, when I was a kid, I was the Lionel Train kid, so that was under the tree.
Yes.
So, yes, I was a Lionel Train geek.
I think for the tinsel, we stopped when I was a kid because we had a dog who enjoyed that too much.
Would eat it.
Yeah. And that's,
well, it made picking up the poop a lot easier.
It was a little, there it is. And that was the thing. Well, it's not as festive.
Yes, I am a sick human being, Jen.
It's okay. It's all right.
I love it. Didn't that tinsel used to be leaded?
Yes.
I remember hearing my mom talking about it being leaded tinsel.
So really?
It was like pieces. You did one piece at a time.
Wow. So it was heavier?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. Well, with the thin tinsel, I for me, it wasn't so much flinging as much as it was dragging. Like, I would have a clump and just, like, pull it through the tree and let the tree sort of grab them. I don't know how I came up with that technique. It had to be my mom. I have to ask her if that was her technique. How about you, Tom Hush? producer's booth?
Yeah. A lot of my Christmas memories are from abroad. I spent a lot of time abroad as a child. So Christmas is in Scotland, where my dad is from, and Christmas is in Singapore. That was very interesting. Not seeing, because I was born here in Chicago, got whisked to the other side of the world where it does not snow because it's a mile off the equator. So got to see a little bit of how Christmas works all around the world.
What was the most unique thing? I mean, obviously you're growing up, so it's sort of hard to gauge as far as what surprised you about celebrations other places.
I would say that, you know, we think of Christmas as a really big deal here in the States. In the UK, it's a whole nother thing.
Really?
It's really like people are basically just not working for a month.
Oh.
It's like, because, you know, they have a totally different structure of things, lots of bank holidays, but it's very intense. It's very traditional. Whenever I was in the UK for Christmas, we would stay in very old houses that were like no heating except for the fireplace. And we'd get the entire family in and, you know, you'd go to the cobblestone square and everybody would be in kind of like Victorian costume.
Wow.
It was like straight out of a Dickens novel. It was really spectacular as a child because it kept the magic part of it alive, even after finding out certain revelations about Father Christmas that I've really never gotten over. But
what kind of revelations were there about Father Christmas?
Well, you know, that he his existence is in question.
Oh, I see. Well, but the thing is, you said something really important is about how to keep the magic alive or embracing that. There are things that there are traditions that you have that start to sometimes feel like going through the motions. Well, this is what we do every year, and this is how you make that. So, you know, kind of to the idea of, we were talking earlier about Jen Kramer's Year of Love, there, you know, that's the thing. You get to find the love in different ways at the holidays. Mm-hmm. What's the magic this year? Like, keeping your eyes open for that, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the traditions are what they are.
Right.
But, you know, things thwart those sometimes. Families end up having to be other places. And so creating new is really fun, and keeping your eyes open and present for that.
Yeah, I think so, too. We don't travel at the holidays. I did spend one Christmas in Mexico. My mother was born in Mexico. And their traditions, obviously, same thing, Tom, is it's really this long celebration. And they have the Three Kings. You know, it takes them time to get to the nativity and their presence every day. And a lot of traditions that, it's funny, my mom didn't really... I didn't get as many presents as it sounds like they get in Mexico.
Really?
The stretch out tradition. She really jumped into like, oh, good, there's just one day a year.
Instead of all the other surrounding holidays.
Although, I hear something. I wonder, do you guys have any, like, some people have rules as far as like opening one present on Christmas Eve. Did you guys ever do that?
We did.
Yeah, our rule in my house growing up was you could open one present on
one
Christmas
thing.
Eve. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My house, you waited until Christmas morning.
Christmas morning.
It had to be after sunrise.
Right.
Because left to my own devices, I would have been downstairs at 12:01 a.m. as a kid.
100%. I would, like, sit there right at the tree, just be like, okay.
Staring at him.
Like, look at the clock. Okay.
It's 12:01 a.m. Okay, let's start ripping.
Let's go.
Yeah, I remember it was so hard for Griffin sometimes. Like, he's like, I could see him like lying perfectly still, his hands folded over his chest, you know, like, you know, trying to hear hooves on the rooftop and just so excited. It was so hard for him to fall asleep. So we'd have to like sit there and read to him and try to get him to sleep, you know, and then there's that worry of like, he's still listening for Santa wrestling around.
Miss it.
Yeah, he didn't want to miss it, you know, we set out cookies and milk for Santa and carrots and water for the reindeer, and Griffin would make presents for Santa. Like, he made a waterproof box. He got this cardboard box and covered it in duct tape, and it was for Santa to put some of his belongings to have on the sleigh, so that like maybe, you know, his like if he had a flashlight or something, or any of his, you know, like just this big waterproof box for him to have.
It's amazing.
So sweet.
Imagination.
One of our listeners from the 312 says, Christmas time growing up in Chicago means the world to me. Sharing that same Christmas spirit with the children and your family and seeing their eyes light up and excited with their gifts is the best. That's our friend Tracy in Hinsdale. More after this on 720 WGN. Tis the season as we continue our wonderful conversation about holiday memories. I have to say music, of course, plays such a big role. My favorite is White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Every year I think, oh, no, what else do I like? Nope, I still come back. Or Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is wonderful, too. Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorites?
The original. Jennifer? Gosh, I love Christmas music.
I do, too.
So there's a lot of really good ones. It's very hard.
It is.
They all have sort of a different significance, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah, mm-hmm. My dad was such a big fan of Bing Crosby's.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband loves Andy Williams, so that's been a big part of my life.
I love the originals.
Yes.
Like, I get the remakes. I get Michael Bublé and all of that, but yeah. I love the first maids. Yeah.
I do, too. Mm-hmm. I really, and he put a Judy Garland in there,
mm-hmm.
and with a Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas from Meet Me in St. Louis.
Right.
And I love it. And I'll Be Home for Christmas is another
one. It's a really great one. Heart-wrenching.
It is. Tom, do you got any, you love music.
Yeah.
What's some of your Christmas music?
I'm just a total sucker for the Charlie Brown Christmas one. Vince Guaraldi Trio, my goodness. It just, they hit all the right notes, and it just encapsulates that special little feeling that Christmas gives you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, All I Want for Christmas Is You.
That. Oh, there you go.
Thought you were right going to say Two Front Teeth for a minute.
Oh, boy.
Or Dominic the Donkey.
Oh, that's a great
Italian
one.
Christmas Donkey. That was a huge hit.
Oh, you have to pull that one. Pull this one up.
Yeah. Italian Christmas Donkey.
Dominic the Donkey?
Oh, boy. You'll know it when you've got to know this when you hear it. What about you, David? While we're waiting for the song, what's some of your favorite holiday music?
There's a jazz version, and I think it was Angels We Have Heard on High, but it's done by a children's chorus, and it just hit me one day when I heard it for the first time, and I was like, okay, yeah, this works. You know, if there's a jazz Christmas channel, I could listen to it all day.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, what's maybe, the I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas? I love that one.
Oh, we'll have to find one that one, too. Yeah. But first, let's give David Jennings a new holiday classic for his favorites.
Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.
I've never heard this before.
Now you have.
It's a doozy.
Okay, that's one word for it. It's different. It's different.
It is. It's different. There's so many. And that's the thing. You know, a friend of mine a few years ago came in to the studio and brought all these songs I'd never heard before. And you're like, what is it that makes something a hit and something that doesn't? Obviously, you have all the great singers, Sinatra and Crosby and Judy Garland. And, you know, my husband was playing some of Dean Martin songs. And he just sounded like, you know, just winging it,
right,
having fun. Just
improv.
Well, if you ever watch any of his Christmas specials, he wouldn't rehearse. At least that's what I've heard. And so he would be reading the jokes as they were going on the cue cards, and he would just laugh at them because he hadn't heard them before.
With this drink in his hand.
Love it.
Uh-huh.
And I also, the Judy Garland Christmas special is something to enjoy as well.
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Oh, you must.
Oh, gosh.
You have to. And she has her kids in there, too. Liza.
Really?
Yeah. And from some of our listeners, some memories of Christmas from the 847. Remember the 1950s Plastic Cathedral? Hold on, let me make sure I've got it. With faux stained glass windows, it played Silent Night when wound up. I would try to look into the windows to see the worshipers. My sister has it, but she found another one in resale and sent it to me. It's so nice. I can imagine that. We had a little piano that looked like a grand piano that you wound up and played Silent Night.
Mm-hmm.
That Silent Night's another wonderful. That one will make you cry too.
Big time.
Right, depending on how it's played.
Midnight Mass.
And on the other end of the spectrum, do we have Hippopotamus? Let's see if we can find that one, too.
Yeah. It's, I just don't get the novelty ones sometimes. I
know,
mean,
but they're fun.
It's they are fun. Yeah. They're incredibly fun.
They're filled with mirth.
Mm-hmm.
isn't that the, where myrrh, isn't that coming to mirth? It's part of the holidays.
Could be.
Trucker Rich says, my favorite kind of Christmas song is by Gary Hoey. I've never heard of that. It's an instrumental kind of hard rock guitar type, but it's Gary Hoey's I'll Be Home for Christmas, and I hope I'm saying Gary's last name correctly. I'd hate for that to go badly.
Is it Huey?
It's H-O-E-Y.
Oh. Howie. Yeah,
I don't know. And
it's French.
Maybe. Oh, here, let's see the hippopotamus one.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus.
I don't think that they that this child understands what playing with a hippopotamus would be like. I think they're fairly dangerous.
Bring a bag of marshmallows.
They kill a lot of people, hippopotamus. Yeah,
they're mean.
They're very mean. Donkeys and hippopotamus seem like they were with, you know, no...
Hippopotamus or hippopotami?
I know. I caught myself before I was about to make that mistake. Do we, anyone? Do we have a ruling on if it's...
Hippopotamies?
Hippopotamuses. I also think that was an adult trying to sound like a child.
Oh, was it adult?
You got that same feeling, too. It's like, I'm not sure that's a little kid.
Who sings that? I've never even...
It's old.
It is an older song.
It's, I think, Gayla Peavy?
Okay. All right.
I always thought, for some reason, I thought it was Shirley Temple, because I'm just like...
Oh.
I guess she was the only child star I knew of.
Oh, before I forget, if you haven't had a chance to see this, speaking of child stars... Macaulay Culkin, have you seen his Google commercial?
Yes.
Spectacular.
I read about it today. I love it.
It is so cool.
It is so funny. And he looks great because, you know, in the last few years, you know, you've seen Macaulay Culkin. He's an adult, obviously,
right.
You know, trying to like...
Married.
Yeah, and grow away. And is he married?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was on Jimmy Fallon the other night.
And you could see that he's trying to grow, and I grew out his hair and wanted to look different. But he's all cleaned up, and he looks like that little kid again.
Just a bigger version.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's telling Google, to, you know, he's in the bathroom, and you think he's going to slap his face with the scream after shaving.
Right.
With the aftershave, and he goes, "Hey, Google, order some aftershave."
That's awesome. Somebody said the level of detail is really great.
It really is.
It matches up everything from the movie with him as an adult. He does the same stuff.
So
except
cool.
there's the verbal instruction to, "Hey, Google."
Yeah.
Is That's it only 30 seconds? Is
yeah, it's a shorty.
Really?
It's not a long commercial.
It is delightful. I really enjoyed that. Oh, I'm getting some information about the hippopotamus song. The hippo song was a girl singing to raise money to get a new hippo for a zoo.
Oh,
I did not know that. And Bobby Collins apparently always played Dominic the Donkey. So...
That's very catchy.
So it's a tradition here at WGN Radio. 847 says, "I can't remember the state, but I learned that little girl was trying to raise money for the zoo on WGN." Wow. So apparently WGN plays a role for a lot of folks when it comes to
So it wasn't a Christmas holidays. Song at all.
Well, but isn't it? Is it? It is a Christmas.
She says
song.
She wants
She wants hippopotamus for Christmas.
To give to the zoo.
To give to the zoo. Wow, what a nice little girl.
Really?
But she says she wants to play with it. I don't know.
So generous.
Don't think she knows how this works. Oh, before I forget, and before we go, I want to say that the zoos, speaking of hippopotamus, I'm not going to do the plural. The hippopotamus is this. Lincoln Park Zoo and Brookfield Zoo, their light shows are wonderful. Zoo lights. Have you been to Lincoln Park Zoo lights this year?
Yes. Oh, my. Well, no, I haven't been this year, but I live across the street. It's phenomenal.
Can you see that light show?
You can.
From where you live?
Part of it.
I want to go live in your house.
Come over.
Okay.
You can watch.
I would love to do that. No, so that must look beautiful to see the whole zoo lit up like that.
It is. Yeah.
If you get a chance, make sure you get to Lincoln Park Zoo. We also did Brookfield Zoo. I'm a little bit of a Lincoln Park Zoo girl.
And it's free.
And it's free. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was really beautiful. What are your plans this Christmas?
I'm going to be local. Mm-hmm. I have family in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and my mom lives in the suburbs. Going to be in Clarendon Hills. Have you been there and seen the Luminaria?
I've never seen the Luminaria.
All of Clarendon Hills does Luminaria in their yards, which is really cool. It's a great Christmas tradition.
That's great.
So I'll be local.
All right.
I'll be home for Christmas.
Yay.
By the way.
Yes.
Hippopotami is plural in Latin, but hippopotamuses is plural in English.
Well, I prefer Latin. I'm kidding.
This is a very highbrow show. We speak Latin.
Yeah, that's right.
Hippopotami.
Hippopotami.
Thank you.
For those of you.
Musses.
Speciesses. Mm-hmm. David Jennings, where will you be for Christmas?
Here.
Oh, you're working on Christmas?
Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. In fact, I'm working the whole week.
All right. Send all of your love and packages to David Jennings at WGN Radio for Christmas. It's, you know, either one. How about you, Tom Hush?
Gonna get the chance to spend Christmas Day at home in Crystal Lake.
Yay! Oh, I love Crystal Lake, the Rouse Center.
Oh yeah, I used to work there.
It's a great venue.
Great place.
And I will be with my family. We actually, one of our traditions is we get a Uno's pizza, one of the flash frozen ones, and we heat that up. Because my dad was a cab driver, we never knew what his hours were gonna be on Christmas Eve and a Christmas Day, so we were just ready with the pizza. And then the big ham and all that stuff.
I love that.
I love it.
The pizza goes along with the rest of the dinner.
No, it's separate days.
Separate.
Yeah,
it.
We would have one for Christmas Eve and then one on Christmas Day. And then over the years, we've been forgetting which one was which. But we'll work it all out. Happy holidays.
Same team, Patty.
Thank you so much for joining
Mary,
us.
Mary.
Yay. More after this on 720 WGN. Mary, Mary. Tried to catch Santa. I don't know what I would have done if I'd seen Santa Claus kissing my mommy. I don't know what I would have done. Did you ever try to catch Santa, Tom?
All the time.
Yeah.
I was like Steve Irwin. What's that, traps?
There he is. Yeah. In his natural setting.
God, he's a beauty. Look at the size of him.
We left cookies out for Santa. And I was pretty sure that my dad took a couple of Santa's cookies. I know that a lot of kids have questions about Santa Claus. And Griffin, one day when we were standing in line at the Northbrook Court Santa, that's our favorite place to go. Because Santa, you know, I know he's got to get around to a lot of different malls and places for photos and conversations with kids. There was one year when the boys were 5 and 7, and Declan, who is younger and has special needs, and you know, it can become very clear to people pretty quickly that his world is a little bit different, that he takes it in ways that we don't expect. And Santa is not something he's interested in. He's not interested in the tradition of Santa.
Really?
Doesn't want to sit in his lap. No, because, I mean, it just doesn't like, hold. Yeah.
It's not for him.
Well, and he also just wants to keep walking, and the photos of Declan with Santa are more for us and for his brother, you know, throughout his life. And a lot of them are Declan trying to get out away from Santa or not look in. And we had to tell the photographers, don't worry about Declan looking at the camera. They would wait. And I'm like, just take the picture because this is him as he is. And one year when they were 5 and 7, I gathered Declan. I was about to put him back in his stroller, and Santa grabbed my hand with those big white gloves. And he said, Santa wants you to know how proud he is of the work that you do, and I know how hard it is for special needs moms. And I almost started crying. I mean, I was like, Santa reached out and gave me a gift that day.
That's a good Santa.
I was a really good Santa. And I know, again, you know, kids have a lot of questions. We were in line another year, and Griffin turned to me and he goes, this is real, right? And it was so matter of fact. And I was like, but it was also a wonderfully open-ended question.
Yeah.
This is real. This is really happening.
Let's talk about real.
Let's talk about real. And, you know, and it's not the matter of, you know, lies don't need to be told. Mm-mm. You know, truth can be shared in different ways. And so many of our stories at the holidays are based on, you know, mythology and all these collections of experiences that we have. So we've always really made sure that Santa is part of Christmas, but in a way that isn't about wanting everything and needing all these things. Griffin, when he got older, started making the list for Declan. So he would tell Santa what Declan wanted, what he liked.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's all good. It's all magic.
My brothers would try to be like, don't give him the presents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
We were just that kind of three boys living in one house. We always thought it was kind of like a zero-sum game. Like, there's only so many presents that Santa can give out. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, well, if Tom gets these many presents, that's one less present for me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once we figured it out.
Sort of working the system a little bit.
Oh, totally.
Oh, boy. Yeah, kids do have questions, and there's a great piece from CNN.com about how to share the information. And, you know, when kids have questions, you know, only share as much information as you need to. Mm-hmm. You know, and they will, they also are working through it. They're working through, like, what does this mean and why, and, you know, and some people don't you know, bring Santa into their celebration.
Sure.
You know, it isn't part of the religious part, it's part of the celebrating, you know. Mm-hmm. and that's the element that I love about it. We actually were watching Prep and Landing. Have you ever seen these?
Oh yeah, that's like, that's a relatively new thing, right?
Oh, I love
the elves,
Prep and
right?
Landing. Yes. Yeah. And the technical elements that you know, the imagined world of how to get the, you know, how the sleigh gets launched, and, you know, they've got this entire, you know, basically the air control tower, right? Yeah, traffic control. Oh, it's so much fun. It's become one of our favorite traditions, is to watch that one.
Something
you,
new.
You gave us a whole list. Okay, so you gave us a whole list of holiday movies, by the way.
Yeah, I did.
And my husband, I didn't have a chance to talk to you about this, but I actually heard Richard Roper share the same sentiments as my husband, because Die Hard was on your not quite Christmas, not yeah. Christmas, but Christmas setting. Have we talked about this yet? He contends, and Richard Roper contends, Lethal Weapon would be more of a holiday movie than Die Hard itself. Have you seen Lethal Weapon?
Yeah. Oh, huge fan.
Right.
Huge fan. And that's from Shane Black, who is very well known for setting most of his movies around Christmas. Like, you get Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
which
Iron
was
Man
on your
3.
List?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's those. He did all of those. They all have Christmas in them to a certain extent, because I think he's fascinated by it, like, and what Christmas means and how he can use that as a setting.
Right. How he can weave these stories through.
Yeah.
And also a lot of action.
Right. And how to make a Christmas movie without it being explicitly about Christmas. But kind of like Christmas adjacent. He's an interesting dude.
Christmas
Shane Black.
Adjacent.
Yeah.
Shane Black. Okay. I have to take a look at that and that lens.
Yeah. If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then technically Lethal Weapon is too. But there's way more references directly to Christmas in Die Hard than there are in Lethal Weapon.
Now I have to watch the two movies. Not that I want to.
Oh, come on.
All right. I think I love Die Hard. I like Lethal Weapon. And it's, you know, just kind of a, there's stuff that I like.
Yeah.
Are there movies that you have that change because of things that evolve later on?
Yeah.
Mel Gibson's a problem.
I had a problem with Hacksaw Ridge getting so much, praise, because obviously the story has nothing to do with Mel Gibson, but it was weird to think that Mel Gibson did what he did. And was kind of shunned from Hollywood, but then under 10 years he was already getting nominated for an Oscar again. So I don't know. I mean, sometimes you gotta separate the art from the artist, and
sure.
I'm a little bit picky about who I do that for, so I'm a hypocrite a little bit when it comes to that. But it's hard to go back and watch Mel Gibson and stuff and be like,
And how much you let somebody grow and change.
Sure.
Is part of
exactly.
It.
Exactly. You know, has he become less of an anti-Semite? I don't know. That's the question.
Fingers crossed. Here's hoping.
Have we reached basic human decency, Mel Gibson?
Let's get to that level, as we all should. Let's take a break here. When we come back, our friends James Vickery and Kristen McAllister join us in studio on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez.
Tell me who sparked the eggnog. Come on and show you.
I know who spiked the eggnog. My husband makes a mean eggnog. Not a lot of people like the eggnog, and that's one of those drinks. It's like, oh, I'm drinking custard, and it's boozy.
Does he do brandy, or what does he use?
Yes, he uses a brandy. Yes, he does. And they're different, but there's something else he puts in there, too. There's supposed to be two. He uses two boozes, I think.
Brandy and love.
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots of love. I am so happy to welcome to the studio Kristen McAllister. I know you're eating dinner. You just got off your flight.
Yes.
You just flew in from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You moved out to LA. We had your last, you had your party, your going away party. You came in studio. We hung out on the air, and you've gone off and become
super famous.
become someone that's exciting to watch, you know, do all these great, be on these adventures. I know you've been Love, and you've been on recently on several episodes of Jimmy Kimmel. And it's just been fun to watch. I know James Vickery's here too, and we'll talk to him as well.
I was here the other night.
He picked me up from the airport. It was very thoughtful.
you guys fly into Midway. I'm an O'Hare girl, and it's because of where I live. I don't know. Midway is that landing is rough.
It's a rough landing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and done. Yeah. it feels like the plane just comes straight down. You're like, yeah, we landed.
No,
yeah.
It was like hitting the brakes hard there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had one of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, look out for that guy's backyard.
Yeah.
How was the airport for traveling? Like, it's not busy yet for the holidays.
It was not busy when I got there.
Okay.
I got there extremely late. Like, I only had 45 minutes to make the flight, but I did. But they had told me that like an hour ago when I should have gotten there, it was really busy.
Yeah.
So I missed that. And then flying in, it's late, so it was not bad.
That's a relief. Mm-hmm. Now, do you, at the holidays, when you come in, you come in, I think every Christmas, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For the family and everything?
Yep.
How prominent is the cocktail bar at the, because for my husband's family, there's always someone with a shaker or a great bottle of, you know, cognac or different things.
It's prominent. It would be me probably being the bartender.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And serving myself and Kristen.
Yeah. It's prominent at both of our families.
It is. Kristen's especially. That's where I got in her family in Louisiana. That's how I got introduced to the old fashioned.
Oh,
that's true.
When we first started dating,
I'm a fan.
Me too.
I'm a fan. The kind of cherry you use makes a big difference.
It does.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's. You don't think it will, but it does.
Yeah.
Orange bitters or regular bitters?
The Peixo.
Oh yeah, but I'll take any bitters. Really, I'm not picky about my bitters.
You'd be surprised. There was one night I made an old fashioned that I've been chasing ever. It was like, for me, the best old fashioned I'd ever made for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to recreate it. So I had to stop because I'm like, you chase an old fashioned.
it's a
long,
long, dangerous road.
I have the big ice cubes.
Yeah. Just that one big one. You taught me that. You taught me the one giant cube because it slowly melts. Mm-hmm. And you don't get too much water in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks nice. It looks classy.
Do you have a holiday drink? Like, do you like the eggnog?
I love eggnog. And I actually just, you know, not doing dairy all the time. I got this coconut milk, or it's called Festive Nog or something. I think it's coconut milk based, and it tasted just like eggnog.
See, that's
great.
And it's probably better for you.
Well, I don't know if any of that stuff is good for you, but I love it. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I love it.
See, that's the thing, too. So we have an article about how to choose some healthier drinking during the holidays, because it's so easy to just eat all the food and all the drinks and all the cakes and all the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know what I try to do is if I'm going to have a cocktail, I try to do it with like a vodka soda, you know, just something that's refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's just other stuff.
The thing with vodka is, like, it just, it's too...
Well,
like,
and it's just not festive enough. It's not... I can get a vodka soda any time of the year.
That's true. You know? That's a good point.
I like to... But then it's very hard. I have a lot of hard time. I have a hard time choosing which drink to drink.
There are a lot of holiday bars, by the way. I don't know if they're doing this over in your neighborhood. The pop-up holiday bars.
No.
There are a couple in Wrigleyville. One's called Santa Baby. And it is just a incredible fantasy land of Christmas.
Ooh.
And then right next door, and they have great cocktails.
Wait, where is this again?
It's in Wrigleyville. It's on Clark. Santa Baby. Then, if you go during if you can go earlier in the day before too many people are out and about.
Yeah, and I haven't been to Wrigleyville since it got kind of changed around.
You got to see Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then right next to it is a pop-up called Elfed Up.
Oh, really?
Which is all elf theme on the movie. So a lot of, they even have the pasta with Pop Tarts and marshmallows.
Did you get that?
We tried it.
And
it's popped pasta with Pop Tarts.
Exactly.
Watched Elf
there.
Last night.
I had to do some wrapping. So that's what I always do is I watch Elf.
That's what I did.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing.
We have a friend that through the holiday season puts on Elf every waking hour.
Yeah.
It's just on in the background.
Yeah, I went to her house once for a Christmas thing, and it played 3 times in a row.
Yep.
Oh, just back to back.
While we were making wreaths.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, because you're kind of paying attention. But
I love it.
Just all in. You're right, though. I think that one of the things this article about choosing healthier drinks at the holidays is none of these are holiday drinks. Like light beer is 103 calories. You know, and we already know that red wine's one of the. You know, some people just like to have their red wine with their holiday
red
dinners.
Wine. Yes, light beer to me is boring.
It's boring.
But red wine is not boring.
Who's drinking a margarita at Christmas, Tom? Are you having margaritas at Christmas?
I mean, yeah, I might put a little tinsel in it. I think just sprinkle it on top. You know, get a little lead poisoning. I think then we're ready for the holidays.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we had some friends who used to have a margarita and cookie party.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, for the holidays.
Sort of that tart and sweet?
I guess. Yeah.
That could work.
It struck me as odd, but it worked. People liked it. People seemed to do it.
Seemed to dig it?
Yeah.
Do you have anything for the holidays planned? What do you guys...
So this year, we're actually going to stay in Chicago through the holidays. Normally, we go down to Louisiana.
Right.
We're going to be going there in the spring. And no, we are so looking forward. We are already so jazzed about Christmas morning and not having plans.
Nowhere
to be. Normally we fly on Christmas Day, and so this is just nothing.
Planless.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm so excited. Down to my pajamas, open gifts. I can't even come down. We're in a condo, so there's no stairs, but still.
Yeah. So some people say, what are your plans for Christmas on Christmas Day? You're like, no.
Yeah.
Nope. None.
Just no.
Well, we do Christmas Eve with this family.
Yep.
So Christmas Day is sort of going to be whatever we want it to be, I guess.
Yeah. You don't even, you're like, I don't even know what I want it to be. There's a thing you don't even know what you want yet.
I mean, I know when it happens, it'll be good.
It'll be what you need it to be.
Yeah.
Just like walk around outside and look.
Yeah.
This is what it feels like on Christmas Day to do nothing.
Especially, if it's snowing. And you, I'm
we
so
probably
excited.
Will do something.
Oh, don't, about some that? Point. Don't make any plans.
I know. No,
but yeah. She's a. It's Chris, like, is more of a planner than me.
It's like a turbo Sunday. Is no. What you say?
I just know that you'll want to go to your mom's at some point that day.
We'll talk about this later.
I've caused a problem on the air. I have caused a problem. Now, James, you pretty much are staying out in Los Angeles for a while. You guys were bi-coastal, kind of.
Yep.
With Kristen in Los Angeles, and you've become
mostly
a,
there.
You've become a Los Angeles guy.
I have. I love it.
Okay.
I like it there.
He's still here often.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not as much.
Well, you have one of the coolest apartments in Los Angeles. It's just it's just wonderful.
Thanks.
We got so lucky.
I like that he's there more.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
That's working out well for you.
Yeah.
How has it been going out on auditions and everything lately?
It's been fine. Yeah. I guess it's been kind of slow a little bit. But I expected it to slow down the last week or so because I booked out.
Sure.
But even before, it's been a little bit slow, but not horrible.
And the pilot season comes up in February, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing.
I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
Kristen actually has a commercial airing right now.
Oh, which one?
Oh, yeah. Well, can I say them on the air? They're not like a sponsor.
It's okay.
Oh.
Yeah, we were talking about the Macaulay Culkin Google commercial a minute ago.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see it today, but so I saw funny. like a
it's great.
Headline about it. Mine's for Credit Karma.
Oh, Credit Karma.
But it's great. In it, she has to, part of the bit of the ad is a dog licking her face.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A dog licked my face.
For how long?
All
day. Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't just, you didn't do that in one take.
No, we did a lot of takes. And it's a big dog.
It's a big slobbery dog. Yes. No, it's a Saint Bernard.
He's so sweet.
Well, yeah.
But
he thought you were too.
Well, they put peanut butter all over my face. And baby food, but not just any baby food. Turkey flavored baby food.
Turkey flavored. It's so gross. She said the dog handler was like gagging.
Yeah. Everybody else was like really grossed out.
I can imagine.
And I was just like, I'm just going to do this. It's my job.
Okay. So when I've gone for auditions, like they'll say things like, are you comfortable eating meat? Are you a proficient driver? How does that come up in the audition?
At the audition, they ask, like, and you're good with a dog licking your face? And inside, I'm like, no, I'm not. But I said, yeah, sure, because what are you going to do?
You're like, wait, what do we do? What kind of commercial is this? Where is this going to air?
And then at the callback, same thing. They asked, and I was like, yeah. They're like, we're talking about a big dog, though. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine with it. I was like, it's a nice dog, right? And I'm like, yeah. And so I was like, yeah, I'm fine with it. Because I'll do it, you know. I don't want to do it on a daily basis, but like for a job, I'll do it. So, and then I got the job. And even at the fitting, they were all like, and you're good with the dog licking it. I was like, what if I said no now?
Well, it makes you think, like, did they start shooting, they started filming, and someone did the same thing you did? Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. And then they're in it. They've got turkey baby food on their face, they just completely implode.
Yeah, I'm sure it has happened in some form or fashion. You know, they have been burned before. And
yeah, they had to have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
are you sure?
I said I was fine with it, and I kept my end of the bargain.
That'll look good on your resume. Yeah.
Special skills.
Can endure 8 straight hours of being licked by a St. Bernard.
Was the St. Bernard okay with you?
That's right.
Oh,
no, who asked the St. Bernard?
Oh, he got really bored. He was bored. He was so bored.
Yes, I like peanut butter. More peanut butter. Yeah.
Yeah, like he, and as soon as they put it on my face, he would lick it off. So like, we had to like, it was very a timing thing where they had to put it on. I had to get down and then like lean in so he could lick it but also make it look like he's not licking peanut butter. And
and I could see how this would sell Credit Karma. I think it all makes sense.
Their commercials are really funny.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to seeing
this one. Yeah, so I like that about it.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
We're hanging out with Kristen McAllister and James Vickery. More after this on 720 WGN.
Hang in my stocking. I can hear a knock. Is that you, Santa Claus?
'Tis the season. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio with James Vickery and Kristen McAllister. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we were talking a little bit ago about trying to drink more healthy during the holidays, but not only do people not try to do that, they also pretty much drink twice as much as they do throughout the year.
I could see that happening.
Do you think it's because of the relatives, or you're feeling festive, or the stress of it? Oh, sorry. Oh. Here you go. Sorry, that was my fault.
That's okay. I think that every day is a celebration. You know, like, every day you're like, oh, I got to see these people and do these things with these friends and this family. And that, and so everything is just like a celebration. Right. So you just keep drinking. At least that's what happens to me. So
especially like when we are in, because normally we'd be in Louisiana for part of it, and then New Orleans, you know, addition to it.
And are there livers made of something else in places like New Orleans and Louisiana?
No, they're
really, they seem to handle it pretty well.
No,
they don't.
No.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I'm actually glad you guys are here, because this is a conversation I've been trying to have, and I don't think people are tracking what I'm trying to explain. When it comes to legalizing recreational marijuana in Illinois, I don't think Illinoisans are ready to get high. I think they need to be eased into it a little bit more. I think that if you just like rip that lid off, because in California it was medically, you had to have a prescription, so at least you're kind of like, what's this, do you know, what is this for, you know,
there's
even
a little bit of a process,
right, there's a process, right, so you're more conscious of what you're doing, and you're, you know, you have, in case you're, you know, you try something and you're confused by it or whatever, or it's not quite what you thought it was going to be, at least you have a doctor, you know, there's a doctor who wrote the prescription, even if it's just for insomnia or your shoulder hurt. But there was more of a process.
Yeah, there was. I don't know that it really
made
meant
a difference.
Anything.
I just think there's been more of a tradition of using marijuana in places like California, places like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. But you know, people do also get high here.
I know they do. I think that more people, when they think, oh, I'll just have this piece of, you know, cannabis chocolate or this lollipop, and then not know that it's going to be a couple hours before it hits you, and think that they're fine. Like, oh, I'll just drive my car, and then all of a sudden, they're behind the wheel and they have a massive panic attack.
Well, yes, we should have some marijuana education perhaps in place.
like good marketing.
Something.
I will say, since it became recreationally legal in California, the labeling and stuff is a lot more specific.
What does it say? This will mess you up quickly?
Well, no. Like this one that will show the exact portions, like how you could cut it to have like a minimum amount, you know.
See, I don't know, right? Because I'm just worried about my fellow Illinois. I mean, I don't.
Are
I can't.
You guys voting on it soon?
I think it's going to be. It's imminent. I think that Tom, don't you think first we need to expand it medically so that it's easier to get medically?
Is
and
that
then,
an option?
Right now, it's difficult to
it's
get
very
medically.
Yeah, difficult.
It's a pain. Yeah. I mean, there's dispensaries around. You'll walk past them. They're a dime a dozen. But like, there's so many things in the way. Like, and I think one of the things is that people, there's not enough research to say like what the scale is, you know, there's not an ABV necessarily that they've decided upon. It's just kind of like on a scale of Doritos on the couch to Grateful Dead concert, how high do you want to be? That sort of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think that there needs to be some education.
Okay.
Right.
That's all right. I could lead that charge.
All right.
All right. You're in charge of education.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit concerned.
Oh, yeah. Well, it would be nice to be able to ease in with the medical, but if they made it a little more available medically, like it seems like it's not very available.
Yeah,
that
right
first.
Now it's, yeah.
That
but
first.
I don't know if that is on the, you know,
yeah, I think they're running right through the door.
Yeah,
they're like, let's just do it.
I'm all for it. Well, they'll adjust quickly. You have that one bad experience, that paranoid, and then you never make that mistake again.
Don't make that mistake again. I don't know. The 224 says there is far less problems with cannabis than alcohol. Far
that's
less.
True.
Definitely true.
All right.
I think. I mean, it's been kind of a silly sort of prohibition.
On marijuana?
Yeah. I heard a story.
Well, prohibition is silly in general, so.
Well, and that's where I heard that. I haven't fact-checked this, but it makes sense to me logically.
Okay.
That the way the ban really came hardcore on marijuana was after prohibition for alcohol ended, and you had all these workers, you know, that were doing this job, and now they had nothing to do, so they kind of focused on other things, and marijuana became one to target.
Oh, I was not aware of that one.
It's
all
the
right.
story I heard.
It's the story you heard?
Yeah, don't quote me.
Right.
It's a good story.
This is one of these people say.
Yeah.
They say.
Yeah, people are saying.
People are saying this happened.
Everyone's saying it. Everyone is saying it. Has it changed since it became recreational
marijuana? It's more expensive.
Oh. Yeah, it's more expensive.
Oh.
It's more expensive. Some things are harder to get now because they have to follow all these different kinds of laws that they didn't have to follow before.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's a little bit not as convenient.
Hmm.
So there's that.
Are the varieties better or does it?
I haven't noticed a difference in the varieties, really.
Like, because the way it was before, it was medically legal, but that was essentially like, you know, it's like one form
legal,
you had to fill
legal,
out. Yeah, it was like, there's, yeah.
I don't know. I don't do well with it. So when I've
Well, yeah, and some people don't. And so, you know.
That's the thing is that people don't realize like each person is so different.
True.
Mm-hmm. I remember I had
an environment too, I will say.
Last night we were talking about Laverne and Shirley and I mentioned this, Tom, where I when I was a kid, I was Shirley. I was the goody two shoes.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And I grew into somehow being Laverne. I don't know what happened along the way. But one of my roommates in college, we were not roommates freshman year, but she goes, you know, I just remember you being this just uptight freshman who was like, I don't understand why people have to get high all the time. And here's the thing, like, I still don't, but at the time, like, I was like, all right, I'll try. And I did not. Although I had a hash brownie one time and I kept staring at myself in the mirror, just sitting there going, who am I? Who am I?
See?
Who am I? But it's just a weird little loop.
Well, I had a good conversation with my Lyft driver the other day about this. Uh-huh. Where I feel I was a late comer to trying
it. I know.
I
remember you telling me just a few years ago you guys had traveled to Colorado. Was that where it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we stayed
at a place. It was
Airbnb. Called the Bud Breakfast.
That was after, but yeah. That was around the same time.
I'm sorry. Let's live there. Did you hear that, Tom?
That's a business.
Bud and great. Breakfast.
Yeah.
An amazing place. Magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a lot of people say, like, I've heard, had conversations where people say, like, oh, I don't like to feel out of control. Or for me, and again, it is different for everyone, and I think environment plays a role, but for me, it's, like, clarifying in some ways. Or you just see things from a different perspective. Like, it kind of opens up. I believe in the...
So you're saying you're saying the control freaks can't do it. I think that's...
Well, that's part of it, yeah. And I sort of lean that way a little bit. And so I do have to keep it in check what I use and how much I use and when I use it. So I sort of treat it sort of like a medical thing.
That's what I go back to that. I think Illinois needs to ease into
that's
it.
That's why she's going to lead the charge.
Yeah. I really would be good at telling people not to try too much marijuana.
708 says, people are not going to be any different if pot is legal. I don't know. I don't trust people.
I think that it's going to be okay.
All right.
It will be.
Because for the most part, it's a pretty, like, it helps people be a little more chill.
Okay.
I feel like that.
They're saying the same people are already smoking. I contend that if it's recreational, more people are like, oh, I'll try a lollipop with, you know. I think more people will experiment.
That stuff is way easier to
maybe
get
so.
When it's legal, right?
I mean, people are definitely, the car that drove past us today when we were crossing the street here, like, it smelled, like, the entire car just drove by and it was like, such a strong smell.
And that's the concern people have, is there's no way to quantify how much is in someone's system.
Right. Like, let me go ahead and say that, yes, I don't think that was a good idea that person was driving like that. But I'm just, it is happening already.
It is all happening already. And a lot of it in garages.
Maybe he was maybe it was just his passenger smoking. I don't know.
Do you remember the loading dock at WGN at the Tribune Tower?
Oh,
it was insane.
Yeah,
there.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Because it was we shared the building with Howells and Hood. And I'm not saying the folks there, but a lot of chefs and people work in the restaurant industry.
When you get done,
tend to, right? It may be. Or maybe just the folks in the Tribune or some of the residents.
Well, both
and
very
everyone
high stress.
And anyone, anywhere and everywhere.
it's just not, I just don't remember it being this like prevalent when I was growing up. But again, I was
a
goody two
shoes.
Yeah, there were a lot of things
Nobody
happening that you didn't
shared
know about.
It with you.
Can I tell you the extent? Yeah, they never shared with me. Like, everyone just thought I was so straight up, you know, just a dork. And I didn't drink in high school at all. And yeah, but I couldn't believe there were people, like, my classmates were having, like, sex. I was like, you had sex? You let him touch you there?
I thought I was that way, too, for a little. Like, I remember one of my friends telling me about this other girl that we knew that had slept with her boyfriend. And I was like, what? why? Right. And she, my friend was like, because she loves him.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. Oh, I just had never even occurred to me that that was something that we should be
that
doing.
That is a thing.
That is, it's confusing. Yeah. I didn't know what happens. Yeah, I didn't know what happened next. Like when I would see movies, I'm like, what? Then what? What happens? Yeah.
I had lots of ideas though.
The 708 says it will be nice to buy it legally. You know what you are getting. Colorado right. has a good system. Merry Christmas to you all. Thank you, 708.
That 708 is 100% correct.
Oh, there you go.
All labeled. Yep.
The 301 says I'd rather have a hash brown than a hash brownie.
Well, those are also good.
Oh, or have them both together. Yeah.
Why not? Why not both? Por que no los dos?
Yeah. Why do I have to choose?
Yeah. Who said there's one or the other? Nobody said that.
No, I'm taking both.
No. I do have a bag of Cheetos at home, but that's I can eat that whether or not I have anything to. Mm-hmm.
Right. Those you just eat because you like them.
Do you like the crunchy or puffs?
Crunchy puffs get too stuck in my teeth.
Yeah, I can see that.
I like the crunchy.
Flaming Hots.
Crunchy crazy. Or puffs, Tom? Do you not like Cheetos?
No, I hate the Cheeto fingers.
Oh, I know.
I hate having Cheeto fingers. It's a horrible feeling.
I say you go with...
Well, then you've got like kind of a little snack for later if you want to be gross about it. But like, I'd say crunchy. No, definitely the puffs get stuck in your teeth way worse.
Oh. You know when they have those online hacks, you know, like and then one of them is you eating your Cheetos with chopsticks.
Oh, really?
That is... what?
That's with something... chopsticks. You just, you know, and, but
so
here's
you
the
don't
thing.
Get the...
Well, plus it also slows you down a little bit too, I guess.
That's
yeah,
true.
That's true.
It would take me forever. I'd have one an hour. I'm so bad with chopsticks.
Make a bag of Cheetos last a week.
Exactly. Yeah. What this bag? I have to get to the bottom of it. I got my chopsticks.
I guess I don't think about the fingers. I'm just like very happy to be eating Cheetos.
This is you know, it's really good. Cheetos and a glass of red wine.
Mm, I have to. They aren't a bad accompaniment. Yeah, they're
and just a little bit edible.
In California for now, unless you have a card. More after this on 720 WGN. The low rider is a little higher. Wait, am I getting this story right? They're remaking Aladdin, Tom?
Yep. They're going for it.
Is this something people were clamoring for? Is this we need...
They're doing The Lion King as well.
Oh, that's right.
They did Beauty and the Beast.
These weird live action...
Did you see the Will Smith image, him?
Oh, yeah.
He looks like... hold on. He looks like, in this picture, for some reason, looks like Carlson. Carlton?
Yeah.
He looks like Carlton, doesn't he? A little bit. The picture's in black and white, so I'm not saying that Carlton looks blue.
But yeah, it's weird because this is like
his hands
him.
Are up like this.
Yeah, he's live action Will Smith, but after they released this image for Entertainment Weekly, he had to come out and be like, "Don't worry, there are sections of the movie where I'm CGI in blue, as that's gonna like make us feel better."
Right?
Yeah.
Because
we just need the old Aladdin so badly.
I don't know.
I guess.
Okay. And it was, interestingly enough, because I went down the rabbit hole of watching Laverne and Shirley last night, they, of course, had the episode, the crossover episode. There's a Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mork episode.
Oh, really?
So Robin Williams, yes. Fonzie's trying to set up a Mork on a date, and he calls Laverne. And Laverne, you know, kind of hot for guys, is like gives it a chance, and then just like, oh, this guy's not what Nanu Nanu.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's like yelling. She's yelling at Fonzie. I was having a lot of fun.
Oh, that's really funny.
You guys,
loved that show.
I didn't really watch it.
Laverne and Shirley, but Mork and Mindy when I was a kid,
yes.
I loved it. Apparently, I loved it.
I was fascinated, and the fact that he had the babies was wonderful too. Remember.
I don't remember a lot of it. I just know that I loved it.
Well, his baby was John Wither.
Jonathan Winters.
Jonathan Winters. Thank you very much. God, I froze for a second there. Right. Yeah. No.
That's right. That was his.
He has an egg. He lays an egg or so. Like, it comes out of his belly button or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm having a weird memory.
What a crazy concept.
What a crazy idea.
Well, the whole thing. And right. So much of that was just on the fly. Like, they would have parts of the scripts where it would just say, Robin does his thing. Come on in, Rick Geezer. Rick Geezer's going to be on Nick D's show in just a moment. And it was funny. I was listening to Nick D talk about Laverne. And so I watched a bunch of episodes last night of Laverne and Shirley. And then I watched the biography on them. And the story, come on over, grab a seat, Rick. Any of them. You can grab this one, too, if you want. And I never knew about the story about Lenny and Squiggy either, because those actors, those are just like two kids. characters, they were actually named Lenny and Anthony. And they wanted, they just would do it like at parties and stuff. And Gary Marshall, like, Penny was like, hey, do that, do those characters. And so they rolled out Lenny and Squiggy, or Lenny and Anthony. And, but apparently it was like this curse word laced sort of improv thing that they would do as these two characters. And Gary Marshall was like, can you do it clean? And so they wrote them into the script.
That's amazing.
It's so good. You should watch his biography. It was fascinating. And yeah, he talked a little bit about how Cindy Williams and Laverne and Penny Marshall, you know, there was some stress on the set, you know, especially when the ratings started to drop, or, you know, the reviewers didn't like the show because it was too slapstick. You know, the reviewers never, it never
improved once they got back from L.A.
Well, that was the thing. They moved them to Los Angeles because they thought that was the shot in the arm that they needed, when that show was so great about these two hardworking women in the Midwest trying to find love.
Mm-hmm.
Best opening. I love that opening.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
Now, Rick Geezer's coming up on Nick D's show with some I like the Santa hats.
I like the Christmas light necklace.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Very much. Thank you very much. Just trying to get in the mood. Tis the season. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got some holiday music from athletes coming up on
Nick
D's show.
I'll be playing all the greatest holiday songs performed by athletes.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
There's
a genre. Well, he's got all the musical numbers by athletes.
I did not know it was a thing.
And I can't think of one offhand.
Yeah. It is a thing, and I am the expert on songs performed by athletes.
Amazing.
I'm self-proclaimed. Nobody is fighting for the crown.
I was going to say.
You can have it.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone else with that talent.
That's right. And we crown you with that Santa hat, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. That worked out
very, very well. Yeah. So that's a lot.
Yeah, we'll have some great songs. We're going to hear from Terry Bradshaw. Oh. Might hear from some local guys, Carlton Fisk, Jim Harbaugh, B.J. Armstrong.
Do you have a favorite amongst them?
My favorite is a Hall of Fame hockey player named Johnny Bauer,
okay,
who played with the Maple Leafs. He put out a song in 1965 called Honky the Christmas Goose.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Okay, it is my most favorite Christmas song of all time.
Not just by an athlete.
No. But, oh, yeah. No.
Wait,
it's like
honky,
that, and
wait,
then Gee Whiz, It's Christmas by Carla Thomas is my second.
The Christmas Goose, Honky?
Honky the Christmas Goose.
Okay, we're not going to play it because it's coming up on Nick D's show with Rick Geezer.
We've been playing it for about 10 years. Every year around this time, I come on a Nick's show.
Uh-huh.
We play that and a whole lot more. Have some fun.
It's our third animal song of the night. We have Dominic the Donkey.
The best one, if you ask me.
Okay, well, we don't know.
Better than the Hippopotamus? Have you played that?
We played the Hippopotamus song.
The Hippopotamus.
Okay. And now we'll round out the evening listening to Nick D's show with...
Yeah.
Honky the
I can't miss out on that.
No.
Honky the Christmas Goose.
And if you check it out on the flip side, because they wanted to continue the because it came out on a record, you know, 45, was the Banjo Mule. Serious.
Wow, we're really in the weeds on this.
Yeah.
It's deep. Yeah.
These are some deep holiday cuts, and you always have them. Oh, that's a lot of fun. I just love that athletes, you know, more so than any other, it seems like than any other genre of, you know, professional, you know, fame, I guess, wants to be a musician as well. Like a couple comics here and there, like Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, he had like a party kind of song.
Right.
Yep.
Party all the time. Yep. Party all the time. Who else wants to sing or tries to sing?
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis had a minute.
Yeah, actors are guilty of that.
Yeah, they are.
Patrick Swayze.
But
she's like the wind.
He did pretty well on that one.
Yeah.
David Soul.
He could do anything, though.
Who's David Soul?
From Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, Starsky and Hutch.
Sure.
Oh, you know the song. I can't. What song was it that he did?
Don't give up on me, baby.
Yeah, don't give up on us, baby.
We got to remember, Patty is very clueless about music.
That's all right.
It's called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge.
Right. It's a thing.
I don't know music.
I'm bad at it, too.
Okay, all right.
That song is more about how old people are. I'm old. You guys are young.
No. Well, Tom knew that.
Tom's a freak about music, though.
Yeah, I was born old. I'm like Benjamin Button.
Came out with
a
cigar.
I talked to Tom once, and he was telling me his parents made him listen to the Smiths growing up.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
I had to listen
he's pretty mopey.
I had to listen to the Ink Spots. I think that's the name of the band.